You do not want to miss today's episode. Today we have Matt Greiner, drummer of August Burns Red and host of the Holy Ghost Notes podcast, in the studio to talk about his testimony, music, and what the band has been up to during quarantine. Welcome to the Happy Holy Hour, a podcast where everyday Christians grow in their faith through biblical examination and insightful discussion. I'm glad you're here today. If you enjoy the content you're about to hear, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode, and visit us at thehappyholyhour.org. Let's get started. Today we have our friend Matt Greiner, the drummer of August Burns Red and the host of the Holy Ghost Notes podcast on the show. As I mentioned, he's the drummer of August Burns Red, a band that has about 900,000 monthly subscribers on Spotify, has been nominated for multiple Grammys, and charted the top 20 on the Billboard Top 200 a few times. And the best part is they're just up the road from us, Lancaster, PA. So this is an exciting episode for us today. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing well. That made me feel really good about myself.
Isn't that wild? You know, I played drums for a couple of bands, and like we never got that big, clearly, but it's always fun to see like your name posted somewhere on the internet that you weren't expecting, right?
Yeah.
So, Matt, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So, I grew up in Lancaster County. I grew up on a farm. I grew up working every Saturday on the farm. The understanding was that you live in this house. There is a roof provided over your head. There's food on the table. And my dad was overworked, working about 80 hours a week or so, give or take. He was working a full-time job and then farming on the side. So any work that I could do was good. And you were just expected to get out there every Saturday and do the job. And so I bring that up first because it plays into who I am in large part. My work ethic playing drums, my work ethic with the band, my character over the years is really rooted in this idea of like my dad taught me to work without the expectation of getting anything back in return. And at the time, I hated it. As a kid, my friends would be at the local football game or they'd be out doing whatever teenagers do. And I would be working on the farm thinking, man, I wish that I wasn't here and I could be doing something else. But as is the case with a lot of things in life, you look back and you value the thing that you were upset about at the time. The thing that felt like a challenge that made you bitter and resentful and frustrated, ultimately in the end, you would never trade it for what you were comparing your present situation to. That's exactly the case. So I look back on farming with fond memories, honestly, so much so that I bought into the farm in 2019, and now I'm creating that life for myself. So I have 7 brothers and sisters. I have 4 brothers and 3 sisters.
Wow.
Yeah. All of them are married, and some of them have kids. So tonight I have a birthday party for my niece, and admittedly, I have to like work in my iPhone notes to keep track of everyone's birthday. It's not to the point where it's like I forget their names, you know, but it might get to that point one day. My grandpa,
especially as we age and our brains get older, and you know, we might forget.
That's exactly right. That's why I play drums. It keeps your brain sharp.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I was listening to an episode this morning, actually, of your podcast, The Holy Ghost Notes, with Luke Holland, which incredible drummer, by the way. But it was funny. I like going back at this time of year thinking, like, what did we think that the previous year was going to be like? Like, what were our guesses? And you and Tim were doing some guessing about what 2020 might have in store. Probably didn't turn out like any of us would have thought. But is there anything that you personally faced this year that maybe you weren't expecting that, you know, you look back on and you're like, whoa.
It's a good question. Yeah. Are you referring to 2020?
Yeah, 2020.
Okay. So we're in 2021 now. It's easy to forget that 2020 is behind us. 2020 was a really good year for me, actually. I feel very blessed. I started the band in 2003 in my parents' basement. We quickly moved out to the barn. My parents were tired of the noise and were like, there's an entire chicken house. It's empty. Go out there and play. So after that, we got signed and we started touring full time. And I've been on tour anywhere between 5 and 9 months out of the year, you know, depending on what chapter of the band it is since 2006. Up until March of 2020, I was on tour with Killswitch for 3 days. It was a 72-hour stretch, and we got sent home because of COVID. And so there we were, grounded and thinking, we'll probably get to Europe in a month or two when this thing lightens up. And of course, it didn't. And so I built the studio that I'm actually in right now, my home studio, and I've been teaching out of here. I launched a subscription-based educational website, much like Netflix, whereas in the past, I had been teaching 30-minute lessons. It's nice to be able to have a subscription-based website where anyone can view your material anytime and you don't have to be present for it. Mm-hmm. It has been a long-time dream of mine to do that. And I guess last of all, in addition to the studio being nice, me being home from tour and having some sense of normalcy, the last thing would be, I was at church on a Sunday and my pastor preached a sermon about Jesus being in the wilderness for 40 days, you know, and as Christians, we're familiar with that, that story and the narrative that comes along with that. But I had never thought about, internalizing that and bringing that idea into my own life. And here's what I mean. I got home and I was like, God, what are you telling me to do about this 40 day number? You know, what significance does it have in my life? And I realized when I got home that I should do something for 40 days. I had never done one thing and stuck with it every day for 40 days. People talk about fasting and I've always sucked at that. That's just not my, I can't too, stick yeah. with it. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
No. I'm not doing that, which means I probably should. But I got home and I was like, I'm going to journal one page a day for 40 days. 2017, 18, 19 were pretty tough for me. There were some things that were going on that I was realizing how selfish I was and how much growing I had to do and what some of that selfishness had costed me in my own life. And after a couple of weeks of journaling, I felt like I was making no growth in this area. It wasn't helping me. It was a pain in the butt. I just wanted to go to bed at the end of the day. I didn't want to journal. I say journal. I didn't want to write this one page, whatever it was. Oftentimes it was just filler, but I stuck with it, you know, every day. I got to do this. I've been doing it for 10 days and I've been doing it for 20. I'm going to make it to 40. And on the 40th day, I sat down to write and what I wrote, was something that had I not committed to that 40-day stretch, I don't think I would have realized. Mm. I think that 40-day stretch brought about something in me that I needed to do. And so I did that thing and it produced an enormous amount of clarity and pain, actually, but clarity in my life that helped me grow a lot in 2020. I am still journaling to this day. Nice. And that was about 10 months ago. So wow. I challenge anyone listening to this. If there is something in your life that's really difficult for you, that you're just challenged by, you can't seem to move forward. If you could think about, you know, your life moving in a direction, think about moving forward and past things and growing from experiences. And you just feel stuck. I felt stuck for a while. And I felt like everything was muddied. I couldn't find clarity. And I just started writing one page a day. Half the time, who knows what I was writing? It doesn't even matter. I was just committed to this thing. And after, you know, 40 days, actually on the 40th day, it's sort of bizarre. I figured out what I needed to figure out and I made a move.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
It's good to like building those, like, what do they say? It takes 21 or 28 days to build a habit that you actually stick with. That's really cool. So as you've gone throughout the year, I mean, especially with the journaling, what's something the Lord's been teaching you in his word?
So that's also a great question. And honestly, it's kind of hard for me to answer because I feel like recently, I feel like God has been showing me that the areas of my life where I felt hurt and rejection, hurt and rejection are the two primary things. Mm. In Luke chapter 5, Jesus, a carpenter, confronts fishermen, pro fishermen. After they've been slaving to try to catch fish unsuccessfully, they're done. They're tapped out. They're ready to go home. And this carpenter walks up to him and says, go out there and try again. Wait, that same area we were just in? No. And who are you, you know? And he said, no, go and cast your nets into deep water. And they did it. And I'm sure some of them were offended by it. At least I would have been. But they went out. And of course, you know, we all know that they caught more fish than one boat could handle. And they had to partner with another boat or boats.
Yeah.
To get it all in, you know? And I heard a sermon on this recently at my church, and it really affected me, because I feel like God is calling me back to the place where I felt hurt and rejection to find the thing that I wanted to find in the first place. Mm. And I have to go back to that same place, that war zone, to get it, to find it. But the only thing separating me from doing that is myself. I just have to do it. You just got to do it. Right. And so I've been challenged by that most recently in the last, most specifically in the last week or two, you know, since I've heard this and I've been thinking about it. I guess, you know, that's something that I'll have to work through for a long time, but it's, for me, the place of hurt and rejection, is not a place I want to go back to. It's a place I want to run in the other direction and not ever turn around. And yet I really feel like God, in sort of an offensive sort of way, is saying, no, I need you to go back there. It looks like a failure, but I'm telling you that there's redemption there, and there's more than you could have ever imagined that you could find in that place.
Praise God. And like when you're touring and stuff, you're in close quarters with people, you're even just relationships with people that you haven't seen in a while. It's really easy to get sucked into those moments where you're feeling rejected, you're feeling hurt. Maybe you said something or someone said something that didn't agree with you, and maybe something happened from there. But, you know, it's easy to let your guard down in those moments. And one of the questions I have for you is like, when you're on the road, when you're on tour with these guys and you're working through these things in your own spiritual life as well, what do you do, you know, to keep Christ at the center and to maintain that, you know, godly testimony as you're out there on the road with everybody?
Hmm. I found in my experience that I've learned more from the people who don't share Christian faith with me than people that do.
Hmm.
And in the beginning, when I started August Burns Red, I wanted the band to be a ministry. I was like, all right, we're going to start this band. We're going to tell everybody about Jesus. It's going to be a Christian band. And I'm going to make sure that happens. I have the power to do that. Right? So not long after we had sort of a breakdown as a band in Florida, something happened. And I said to JB, I'm like, all right, I'm done. I'm done trying to father this idea. And of course, how could that ever work? How could we ever think that we can control the lives of four other people, and sort of champion them into believing something that they have to believe first for themselves?
Right.
Like it was just an incredibly prideful foundation to something that could never work. And it was really selfish, honestly. Mm. And so I realized over the years that, wait, I have a whole lot more to learn about how to be fair and loving and kind and empathetic towards other people from the people I'm around who I thought that I could help, from the people I thought I had something to, you know, to tell. A great example of this, I was on tour. I was walking with Jake, who's the vocalist for my band. We were going somewhere on tour, probably to the gym. Some kid on the way there was like, hey guys, can you guys buy me a pack of cigarettes? And this kid was obviously underage, you know, he's just looking for some help. And I turned and I looked at him and I go, ha, we're Christians. And I think Jake punched me. I'm pretty sure Jake punched me. If he didn't with his fist, he did for the next 45 minutes with just laying into me about how much I sucked as a human being. Because in reality, obviously, in hindsight, I should have said, sure, gone into that 7-Eleven, bought a pack of cigs, sat down on the sidewalk, probably smoked one with him and talked to him, you know, because the Christian faith tells us that we're to be there for each other And to really love one another requires some sort of cost. There's a cost to it. There's a sacrifice. The cross tells us that, most importantly of all.
Yeah.
And I thought that Christianity was this life led by morality and doing the right thing every single time. And that will change people's hearts. That kid will say, oh yeah, sure. I'd love to listen to what you have to say. You prideful bleep, 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 who won't buy me a pack of cigs. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how pathetic of me. And that's what I mean. So over the course of the next couple of years, I learned how much I had to learn from people who had differing views than I did. Last of all, Jake and my lives were so different from each other. So Jake was raised in a home where there was abuse. There was not a strong family unit. You weren't really sure if you could trust everyone. You weren't really sure if everyone loved you. I was raised in the opposite of all of that. So when Jake joined the band, he would be telling me stories, and I couldn't believe that that existed in the world. And that you could have someone as great as Jake to come as a product of that. Someone who was like a sponge, just looking to learn as much as he could about Jesus, which was the opposite of my experience in church, where everybody acted like they knew everything there was to learn. And there was nothing else that they could take and internalize and work on. They weren't teachable. Jake was extremely teachable. Me, on the other hand, talking about my family, showed Jake that there was such a thing as love and acceptance and integrity. And we didn't realize it at the time, but we helped each other in enormous ways. And that he showed me how much I needed to change, because this religiosity was hanging over my head. And he learned how accepted and loved and forgiven he was into this relationship with someone who died for him.
Wow. That's powerful, man. And it goes to show there's always ministry happening, whether it's between your bandmates or even between some random kid that you just met walking on the street. Have you had any interesting interactions with like maybe you're on tour with another band and you're talking with one of them, and maybe they're not a Christian, they're not a believer. Have you had any interesting interactions where you've gotten to do some really neat ministry there?
I'd say most of that's happened on the ground. And what I mean by that is after the show, I'll hop off the stage, and there's a barricade separating the crowd, you know, from us or from the stage. If you've been to a show, if you're listening to this and you've been to a show, you know, maybe you're the kind of person that wants to go to the front of the room and you go as far front as you can. That's the barricade. And that's separating you from us, from the stage. If it's a really DIY show, there's no barricade. And those are great.
Nope.
But in this case, we jump down. Typically, Jake and I will jump down and we'll talk to kids. And I've had more interactions than I can even recount with people who have been in dark and difficult places, you know. And our music and our lyrics have helped them maintain a sense of hope and order, I guess, in their world. And so when they say, "You're my hero," or "You saved me," or "You saved my life," or "Thank you so much," oftentimes it's an opportunity to talk about what God's done in my life. Because certainly I can't take credit for the fact that I'm in a band that's successful, the fact that I'm you know, on tour, traveling the world. This is my job. So I can really give credit to God for that. And then that conversation can go any which way. But yeah, lots of interactions with fans for sure.
That's sweet. So those are some great questions and answers about like more of the spiritual side of life. And I wanted to make sure that I got some questions in about the music side of life. You know, this is a lot of fun. This is a fan question. A fan of our show wanted me to ask you, what are your favorite and least favorite aspects of being in a band of this multitude?
Right. So one of my least favorite parts is that I have to travel a lot, which is going to sound so dumb to somebody that's looking to get out of their hometown. I used to work with these landscapers. Sometimes I'll work for a local landscaper, and the guys I would work with would be like, "I can't wait to get out of this town." And at that time, I had been touring quite a bit. I had been to Europe and South America and Australia and Canada. So like four continents or so. And I would say, I'd kind of like probe them a little bit on that. Like, what do you mean? Like, where do you want to go? Well, anywhere but here. This place sucks.
Oh, man.
I'm like, all right, go. You should go do it, because actually where we live is incredible.
It really is.
Yeah. Where we live is incredible. And so years later, I go back and I ask a couple of those guys what they think and why they're still here. They're like, oh, we travel a little bit. Yeah, where we live is pretty awesome. So that's just my defense against anyone that's listening to this right now. And it's like, you are an idiot for saying that your least favorite part of your job is traveling. I'm a little calloused and jaded, I think, because I've been doing it for so long.
Sure, sure.
Traveling is still somewhat special, but it is still my least favorite part. My favorite part would probably be just seeing how our music has traveled the world and getting to play this instrument as a career every night on tour. I love drums so much. I love drums more than I loved them when I first started. I'm challenged by this instrument. It's by far the hardest thing I've ever done, you know? And if you're listening to this and you could picture or think about the hardest thing that you've ever done, the most challenging thing, oftentimes it's the thing you like the most. It's why golf is so fascinating to me, and why Tiger Woods is addicted to it, you know? In a famous interview from years ago, he said, I'm addicted to this. And it's because it's challenging. If it were easy, there would be no value in it.
Yeah. What's that saying? It's not just a passion, it's an obsession.
Yeah. I'm obsessed.
You know, I'd be strung up if I didn't say that my friend Matthias in South America, he loves your music. And on behalf, I say hi.
Hi, Matthias. Thank you. I love where you live so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been to, he lives in Santiago, Chile, mm-hmm. and it's an amazing place. I love it down there.
Absolutely. Have you been to Chile?
Yeah, I've been there three times. Okay. I've probably spent a cumulative, maybe a month and a half down there. It's sweet.
Have you been to any other countries down there?
Not in South America, okay. But the goal is I want to get down to Argentina. That's like I want to get down there. They have good food.
Oh man. You go to Argentina. I remember the first time we went to Argentina and we went out after the show with the promoter, and he brings over this, it was kind of funny. It's like an aluminum cart, and on the cart it's half loaded with liquor, you know, all your liquors, big drinkers down there. And then on the other half, or maybe I think it was a separate cart. That would make more sense. Two carts, liquor cart, meat cart.
Yes.
And the meat cart was just like amazing cuts of meat. And they would just walk up and, would you like some of this, this, or this? You say, well, take a little bit of everyone. And they take this incredible knife and just slice down through and give you some of the best meats you've ever had in your whole life.
So good. And it's like all you can eat down there. It's insane.
It's all you can eat. The culture is incredible. People are so nice, so inviting. The fans, it's the only place in the world we need security guards. Like, we get off the bus, and we get these big dudes walking on either side of us, because the fans will just reach in and try to just pull your hair. Oof. Or your shirt or your pants. And it's not out of ill intent. It's just they're trying to get anything they can of you because they've been watching you online for so long or listening, and bands just don't go there very often.
They're very dedicated fans. I remember one of the band that I played in released an album like a couple years back. We released one, and I sent it to a couple of contacts down there. And then, you know, on Spotify, you can track on where your songs are being streamed. And I think like 90% of our streams were from Santiago, Chile. Like, oh,
yeah.
Oh,
that's incredible.
I
love it there. Yeah.
So this year, I mean, 2020, 2021, it's been nuts. How has coronavirus and this whole pandemic impacted your band operations? I mean, what have you guys been doing? I know you've been doing some live streams, some music videos. You know, what else has been occupying your guys' time?
Mm-hmm. So we did the Thrill Seeker live stream. You know, we did Christmas Burns Red. A lot of rehearsals for those. That's 30 songs total.
Oh.
Yeah. So I had to go back and I would search on YouTube for my own band's songs, drum covers, because I forgot how to play them, because oftentimes I have never played them since the studio. So like I'm watching some kid's drum cover that he did right after our album came out in 2009. And, you know, he just threw it together, has like 130 views, and I'm referencing it for like several days. And I'll leave a comment and be like, thank you. This was awesome. really helpful in helping me learn my own bad songs, you know? And you can imagine, like, 12 years later, he's probably working some office job and gets this notification from a video that he forgot about. And he's like, yeah, what?
Or you're learning it again from Luke Holland, who covered your music.
Yeah, that too. So we've been actually really busy. We have a project in the works right now. We obviously released Guardians last year and did a lot of promo around that. Both the live streams were an exorbitant amount of work. And then this year we have a lot planned, even though COVID's here. So yeah. I feel like it's just a matter of being creative, having other band members who are hardworking and driven, which I am in the best band in the world for that. Everyone is really, really hardworking and creative.
Those guys are awesome. The music video you guys just released for Standing in the Storm. Mm-hmm. Did you guys record that in like a green screen room and then had someone do all the animation? I love that stuff. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
You said you're like working on some new stuff. Are we allowed to know of any potential new music in the pipeline for 2021?
No, you're not actually.
Music happening, right?
There's nothing new happening. The project we're working on, it isn't something I can talk about, but you'll know soon enough. I'll just keep it at that. It's a lot of work and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Good.
It's something that we can do right now to maximize the time that we have at home, you know, and give our fans as much content as we can. We've just been pumping content since like fall, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of that content was captured back like last spring and summer. Pretty much as soon as we were grounded, we just started populating content.
So. That's good. That good quality content takes time to do. And it's good that you guys had that, you know, you're on the ground, tours canceled or postponed, you know, we have to pivot and do something to make the most out of this time. That's good to have people on your team that can help you do that.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So do you ever play drums? And you don't have to tell me what church or anything like that, but do you ever play drums for your church? I know as a drummer, it was always weird to go from like a Saturday night punk rock show, you know, where people are getting rowdy. And then like 12 hours later, it's like, now I'm playing worship in a church. It's always a weird transition.
Yeah. I've done that before. That is really strange. Have you found that church music for you coming from punk or metal was an easy genre to play, or did you feel like you really had to work at it to make it right?
So I started playing drums, and like the first genre I played as many Christian drummers is worship music.
Yeah.
And then I got into the punk rock stuff. And then I actually found it really challenging to come back to the worship stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's just a totally different beast you're working with.
It is. It's all about that build. Create that tension, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you think you're about to break out of this build? No. We're going to tag a little bit. I actually started a worship band last year. We were writing for most of the year and we are almost done with the mixes. So it's called Clay Collective. And maybe by the time this comes out, we can release a song with it.
Yeah.
That would be cool. Maybe it's like an intro or outro. So I actually didn't even play drums on the record. I was doing rehearsals for the Thrill Seeker show at the time that we were recording it. So I had another drummer play, but I helped. I just helped with the project overall. Right now I'm working on the artwork. Getting someone to do artwork and the album title, which tentatively at this point is going to be based on what we talked about in the beginning of this episode, Luke chapter 5. And, this idea of being called back to the place that you felt hurt and rejection.
Wow.
So I don't play for my church for basically the reason that you just mentioned. It's not a transition that I particularly enjoy. I would rather focus my time and energy on what I do for work. And the second reason is when I go to church, I like to just be there in the back and go to church, you know? Yeah. When I'm playing drums, I don't have the ability to... it's kind of sounds so weird, but I don't think about God at all when I'm playing drums in church. I'm focusing on what I'm playing, how I'm playing, and how the song sounds. So it's not a worship experience. It's just a performance. That's just how I'm wired. That's how I'm built. Probably a product of 15 years of doing what I've been doing, playing at a high level in a performance setting, entertaining people. So I would just prefer not to say I haven't, but
right.
There's so many good church drummers out there. Let them have it.
Yeah, they can take it. I'll stay away from that.
You guys got it. You guys can build eighth notes.
Yes, keep it going. So like when you're practicing on your own, right? What genre do you find yourself practicing the most or playing along to?
I don't really play to anything but ABR.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. I just launched this educational website, so I'm spending even more time playing ABR. So like, for example, I'm doing Whitewashed for February, and I'll play it at full speed, 88% speed and 75% speed. And it's challenging to slow something down, even though you can play it at full speed. It's like, instead of using your ankles for double bass, now all of a sudden you're into like hip flexors.
Yeah.
You know, because everything's just a little bit slower. So no, I'm so boring with music, man. I really don't listen to much music, and I listen to mostly podcasts. And even then, like I won't listen to anything when I'm driving. My girlfriend will turn on the radio or turn on, you know, Apple Music and play whatever she likes. And that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't really have a preference.
Yeah, no, that's good. I kind of find myself doing the same. It's like I stick to what I know, which, you know, sometimes I need to come out of that. I need to play different genres to get better at the...
Yeah.
The challenge at slowing something down, though, I feel like, especially with ABR stuff, you have to be so precise on... Oh, man.
Yeah, you would think it would be a relief. Like, oh, thank God I can slow this 220 BPM part down to 180. But it almost makes it more awkward.
Yeah, yeah.
So the goal is that's making me better, and it's helping my students figure out what the songs are. That's the whole point of the show. But I wanted to say about music, I have been listening to Death Cab for Cutie more again. I love Death Cab, and I met their drummer at NAMM, and just out at NAMM a year ago today or this week. And it just kind of rekindled my love for that band. And I've been listening to a record called Thank You for Today, which I think might be their latest. It's freaking great. There's a couple of songs on there that are absolute bangers. Like it's not as good as Plans, you know, in my opinion. That record's just a classic. Transatlanticism. But that band's awesome.
I got into Death Cab way after everyone else did. And I feel I was like way late to the show on that one.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was probably like maybe a year ago that I was like, oh, these guys, I like these guys. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. They're so good.
Before we go here, as we're running close to being out of time, you have this podcast called Holy Ghost Notes. It's been around for maybe a year and a half. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about the podcast and where they can find it?
Yeah. So Holy Ghost Notes is a podcast with one of my buddies, Tim Anderson. I started a nonprofit with him back in 2011 called Brick by Brick. It failed and fell apart because we both got tired of having meetings with people that just were not, it just felt like there were meetings upon meetings upon meetings, and there wasn't any action in any direction. Everyone on board was like amazing to work with. I think Tim and I just didn't really have a good understanding of what it was going to take to accomplish this nonprofit. So we lost touch. 2 years ago, Tim called me. I was on tour and he said, hey, we should start a podcast. I haven't had conversations with anyone like you since you 8 years ago. He said, let's talk about God and let's talk about drums, as the podcast name implies. So much like this, we'll talk about faith, you know, or we call it a God topic, but God topics would include like rejection, love, peace. Our most recent one was actually about what we just talked about, Luke 5. So it's whatever is relevant in our lives at that time, we'll talk about. And then the drum topic is any from like tuning to drum DNA, like you have it in your own self to play drums well. It just takes work and practice. Teachers are good, but it starts with you. So it's a fun combination. There are listeners who don't play drums at all, and they just skip right past the drum topic and go to the faith topic. And then there are, I'm sure there are people who could care less about what we have to say about Christianity, and they're like, psh, drum topic's over, I'm out of here. So if you're interested in checking it out, yeah, it's called Holy Ghost Notes. We have a new episode every 2 weeks.
That's sweet. I really enjoy the different guests that you have in there. And it's a lot of fun to listen to. So if you haven't listened to that podcast, I highly recommend checking it out. And last question before we head out, what is your favorite Lancaster County eatery?
That's a good, is that your question or is that a fan question?
That's a my question. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. okay. All right. So
many good ones. So
I know. And I feel like the first thing I want to say is just obnoxious, but I was just there and I loved it. And it's right down the road from you. It is right down the road from you. Shady Maple.
Oh yeah.
Shady Maple is just a special place. So much food. And I just had a really good experience the last time I was there. I had Eggs Benedict.
Ooh.
And I had tons of bacon. And I was just impressed with the overall food quality and just how much food there is in that place. Oh, and the other thing is, too, it's kind of an experience. So there is an artist named Abner Zook. He's a Lancaster County legend. And yeah. I only found out about him like a month ago at an auction. One of my relatives was like, hey, Matt, there's a painting that's going to be coming out of this house at this auction. It's Abner Zook. It's going to go for $15,000. And I was like, what? So they bring it out and it's called a diorama. And it has sort of like a black light at the top and it has all this depth to it. It's a 3D painting basically. And it sold for $14,000 to an Amishman.
Wow.
And so I was told after this, I was doing some homework and I figured out, hey, Shady Maple has tons of Abner Zook paintings. In fact, when he passed away, his son donated a large amount of his personal like exhibitions, if you will, like full-blown life-size structures to Shady Maple, which is the perfect resting place for his art. His art encapsulates like Lancaster County living. So it'll be like 10 Amish women around a dinner table talking, but the painting's coming at you because it's a diorama. Or it'll be like a horse-drawn carriage going down a dirt lane, you know. So I love that. I ate quickly and I just went walking around Shady Maple.
Because they have one really big one, like right when you walk in. And then on the walls, they have like these, I think he's the same artist that did these paintings, but they're like 3D. Like they come out.
Yeah, that's at New Zook. Yeah.
Yeah. They're sweet looking. It's impressive. Man.
And they're so expensive.
Yeah. I was like, don't touch it. Don't touch it. Walk by it, look at it, don't touch it. Cool, man. Well, hey, Matt, thank you so much for joining us today on the show. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you. This was actually, this was incredible. This was a very well done interview, and I really appreciate you spending time with the questions and the format. If you are a listener of this podcast, you're listening to the right podcast, honestly. I wish that people knew what it was like to be on podcasts so that they knew whether to listen to it or not. This has been a good experience as a guest. So,
oh man,
thank you for what you're doing, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you for joining us today on the Happy Holy Hour. Now, after I tell you about how to connect with us, stay tuned because we are premiering Clay Collective's newest tune, Who Is This Man? This is the band that Matt was talking about earlier in the interview, and we're so excited to release this single on our show, so don't miss it. If you have any questions about what it means to be a Christ follower, please don't hesitate to reach out. Our email is happyholyhour@gmail.com. Send us an email or connect with us over the social media accounts that we have, like Facebook and Instagram, and we would love to connect with you in that way. You can also leave us a voicemail in our voicemail inbox at 484-961-0434. Now, don't worry. We're not going to pick up the phone and harass you or anything like that. Just it's going to go right into a voicemail inbox so that you can just leave us your questions or comments, and we will be glad to address them on the show. Remember to subscribe in your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. Leave a review so others can find the show. And lastly, visit our website, to see some other really helpful resources. So here is Who Is This Man by Clay Collective.
Who is this man that drank from the sinner's well with endless love that's poured out for me? Who is this man that fed the 5,000? What love is this? How can it be? The tree.